Hey everybody, Rob here. On today's podcast with Josh Wigler, we're going to talk certainly about CC, but first I need to talk to you about CISO, which is the place for comedy. That's CISO, S-E-E-S-O. It's the new ad-free streaming service that brings you hilarious original series, hand-picked classics, and weeks of stand-up specials and more. Bingeable comedy anytime, anywhere with CISO. In addition to a bunch of hilarious original series, they've got every episode of SNL ever, including new episodes the day after they air. You could be watching Tom Hanks right now hosting SNL this past weekend, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Late Night with Seth Meyers the day after. They even have classics like 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, and even Saved by the Bell. If you're serious about comedy, you've got to try CISO. Stream it anytime, anywhere on virtually any device, and it's ad-free at just $3.99 a month. That's less than you pay for a latte. And CISO is ad-free in just $3.99 per month. And right now, the listeners of Robinson Podcast can try CISO for free for 2 months. That's an incredible deal. When you use the promo code RHAP at checkout, that's 2 free months of CISO, shows that you can't get anywhere else, from critically acclaimed series like Take My Wife and Harmon Quest with Dan Harmon to all 40 plus years of SNL. CISO is the only place that offers every episode ever made and the new episodes the day after they air. So just go to CISO.com, that's S-E-E-S-O, to sign up right now for 2 months with the offer code RHAP at checkout. That's CISO. CISO.com, promo code RHAP. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back once again to talk about the episode number 5 stories of Millennials versus Gen X with Josh Wigler in the Wiggle Room.
Check it out.
Josh.
George.
Lur.
Lur.
Yes.
Lur.
Yes.
Lur.
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 Yes. Do the wiggle dance. Do that wiggle dance. Do it.
Yes.
How many people actually do the wiggle dance? Let me know.
Oh, I think a lot, probably.
You think so? I want like videos. I want people to send in their videos of the wiggle dance. I want to know what it looks like. I want us to like have some sort of uniform dance by the time this whole thing is over.
You want an epic like mashup of everything.
What I'm asking for. That's yes. What I'm looking for. Yeah, I want to do it as like a just like a montage, like a training montage, but with the Wiggle Room theme song.
Perfect.
I don't know what you'd be training for. Like, I don't know if that's like good training music, but it's a thought.
All right, Josh, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm having a little bit of a bummer of a weekend here, Rob.
Bummer. No, why? Why?
Bummer. It's been tough. It's just like thing after thing has been really difficult. The co-creator of Preacher died, Rob. The illustrator of my favorite comic book of all time, Steve Dillon, passed away this weekend. So I'm very upset about that. My cat is very sick.
Oh, no.
Emily and I have this. None of this is a setup. This is not like a Wandaism or anything like that. Emily and I had to put our cat in the hospital for the weekend, so she's in there. She'll be in there for the next few days, so we're stressed about that. And the worst thing of all is that The Walking Dead premiered this weekend, Rob.
And so I was resisting making a Dez Australian Survivor joke also, Josh.
Sometimes, cat, I don't like you.
Yes.
That is how I feel about my sick cat right now. I'm not happy about the whole situation. I'm very, very, very on edge and a little bit stressed out about it. So a little bit of an off-balance Wiggler in the Wiggle Room this weekend.
All right. Well, I hope that this is at least some sort of a distraction for you get into everything from the Millennials and the Gen Xers.
It's good. I need this. This is huge.
Okay. Well, anyway, Josh, very excited to talk with you before I see you in person in just a couple of days.
Before I see you in person.
Yeah. This is the last day of podcasting I'm doing. I'm recording these on Sunday and then I'm headed out to New York on Monday. So very excited to see you in the flesh.
Yes, it's going to be great. You are coming into New York. You're flying out tomorrow, today, as people are listening to this, because this is a Monday.
Yeah. Monday morning is my flight.
What are you looking forward to the most? You're excited about this plane ride.
Well, we'll see. That maybe there could be some Australian Survivor in the mix.
What else should we talk about before we talk about Survivor? Do you want to talk about The Walking Dead? The Walking Dead has already aired by the time that you guys are listening to this, so we just have to assume what happened. Who did Negan kill, Rob?
Well, hold on. You're getting the podcast crossed, Josh. Of course.
Wasn't it crazy when Negan clubbed Rick on the top of his head and Rick woke up and it was just all a dream, this whole experience, and he started the zombie apocalypse all over again, except it was an alien invasion instead of the zombie apocalypse?
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's actually a real thing that happens in the comics.
Oh my God.
That's not a joke. That's actually
kind of
real.
If you want to hear more of this conversation, check out our Walking Dead recap on Post Show Recaps. But Josh, I'm heading into NYC, not NYCC.
That's New York Comic Con. You're a week or two late for that.
Well, tying it all together with The Walking Dead.
No, Ty was from a different season. Sorry. I'm back. Bring me back.
So let me know from your conversation with Cece, did you gather any new information on how this all played out this past week?
No, I think that for Cece, like the sad thing when talking to Cece was like, you know, I asked her, she was the target of the vote every single time she went to a tribal council and finally got voted out on her fourth tribal council. But the whole time she's in the game from the very beginning, the very first tribal council of the season, she is being targeted. You know, she's either getting votes cast for her as like a tiebreaker thing, or she is the person who's supposed to go home, or she's an errant vote from Jessica. So she's constantly got to be on the edge of her seat. And I asked her, like, does that callous you after a while, or does that leave you feeling pretty raw and exposed? And she talked about how, yeah, it's the second thing. You can't relax. You can't even enjoy that you're in Fiji right now. All you're thinking about is, if we lose this challenge, which seems very probable because we keep losing to these millennials, I'm probably going home, or I'm at least at risk. So it sounded very, very stressful. And then I was so sad about this that she said, and then finally, when we hit the tribal swap and it was 3 Gen Xers and 2 millennials, I was like, okay, great. Finally, I'm good. I'm set. Like, I don't have to worry. I can actually take in the scenery. I can actually enjoy myself out here for a minute. And as is the classic Survivor story, Rob, it's when you let your guard down like that, when you're at your most vulnerable,
that
you get blindsided. So that really made me feel awful for Cece. That was really, really tough.
Yeah.
That's painful. Very difficult.
Josh, I know in your exit interview with Parade that Cece spoke about what it was like living with David Wright.
I thought that this was a fun question. I wanted to get her take on this because David has been such a good character here for good and for ill. He's been a big character here on 33. And so Cece has been with David from the beginning. She's been with him on Gen X from the very start. She swaps over here. She's blindsided by him. She's voted with him at times. So I feel like she really had a full David Wright experience. So I asked her, what is life like with David Wright? You know, we're seeing, you know, this guy acting very paranoid, but we're also seeing him retrieve idols and being on the right side of votes. So what is it like to live with David Wright? And she gave a good answer. She said, honestly, David is a very lovable guy. You can't hate him. No matter how he does and how he flips or uses idols and changes his mind and so forth, he really is a lovable guy. But his paranoia is real. When the lights went out, that's when his paranoia was at its highest.
Oh, no.
He'd be scared. Something would crackle in the fire and he would jump. You would see a bird fly through camp. We had birds that came through our camp at night and he would start screaming and waking people up. You would freak out and then realize, oh, it's David being paranoid. He's just scared again. And that's what it was. If he's walking by himself and someone comes up behind him, he starts jumping. That was real, but he was a lovable guy.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a good description of the dichotomy of David, somebody who these people do really seem to genuinely like. I think that David has definitely, you know, even if he's been somebody that people don't know if they can trust or if he seems a little squirrely, I do get the impression that everybody has enjoyed his company out there. But it's also a nice contrast between like that and how deeply afraid he seems to be of living in the wild here in Fiji, and contrasting that with a guy who's also proven himself to be on the right side of a bunch of votes. If swinging a little big, swinging at some wild pitches here and there, still connecting. I think it was a good description of David. I liked that.
Speaking of David Wright swinging at wild pitches, that yes. When I was at dinner with my lovely wife, Nicole Sesternino, and she had asked me, what's going on with David Wright? And I asked her, the baseball player or the survivor? Uh-huh. And she had said, no, the baseball player. I said, not as good as what's going on with the survivor. Yeah. Sadly.
Poor sadly. David Wright. Baseball David Wright may never play baseball again. Is that right?
It's possible. He's going to give
David
it a go.
Wright?
He's going to give it a go.
I always liked David Wright. Every time I would watch David Wright play, though, he would do poorly. So
I shared that experience.
Indeed.
Josh, so going
what
back.
About the birds? What about the birds going through the Gen X camp at night? You know, this thing that Cece is talking about. We had birds that came through our camp at night.
T-bird?
I would be afraid of that. Wouldn't you be afraid of just like the random night birds that are coming into the Gen X tribe as you're trying to sleep?
Yeah, night birds sound terrifying.
Doesn't that sound awful?
Yeah. Why aren't they sleeping?
Fear the night bird.
What are night birds? Like owls?
I don't know. They're like owls that that talk to you if you're alone and no one else can hear and you have the power of hearing the owl speak.
Yikes.
Yeah, if you speak Nightbird, they will speak directly to your heart and no one else will know what you're talking about. It's a really sinister version of speaking llama.
Well, Josh, there's one other factor at play besides Cece and David as far as the Gen Xers go on this new purple tribe. And that was Chris, who you predicted to be voted out of the tribe this week.
Did I outright predict that he would be voted out of the tribe this week, or did I suggest that he would be somebody that I would target and I see a really strong case for why you would vote Chris out? Was it a prediction or a supposition?
I don't know. This is, sounds like spin.
We'll have to play the tape. No, I don't want to
spin. You're like a real Kellyanne Conway right now.
I don't want to stop it with the Kellyanne Conway. Seriously, get that out of this wiggle room. None of that. We're done. No more Ken Bone. No more Kellyanne anything. Like Survivor, we are ignoring the Kellys. All right. So let's get back on track here. Let's focus up. I'm the one who's calling for focus. All right. So no spin. No spin on the Chris thing. I stand by what I said with the Chris thing. I believe that what I said, roll the tape. I honestly have the memory of a goldfish or a nightbird. They also don't have great memories. I remember saying that Chris would be a great person to vote out, considering he is so strong, considering we are swapping things up, considering that he's probably going to be difficult to work with. He might be a raw nerve after everything that happens with the Lucy blind side. I don't think that any of that is still incorrect. I think what happened with Chris this week, and really, really terrific job on Chris's part, is he bonded very, very swiftly with Zeke, who is a Chris Hammonds fanboy, we have come to find out. And he used that really, really well. He played that incredibly effectively. He forged a really strong bond with Zeke. He, you know, liked Michelle enough to work with her. He was able to convince David this is the way that the tide is turning. I think that he, in a really sort of intelligent, long view of the game, started with this argument of we're going to need the millennials if we're going to survive at some point further down the line, certainly if I'm going to make it, according to Chris. And I think that that's really smart. So I think Chris did really well this week. I think I still could see the argument for getting rid of a guy like Chris, but the big X factor to me is that Zeke, who needs somebody on that Gen X squad, if he's one of the two millennials versus three Gen Xers to work with, if he's to stand a chance at surviving in this new orange tribe, that he happened to very genuinely connect with Chris. And that was really, really good for Chris. That was really good on Zeke. Really good play on both of their parts this week. I still feel like there is an argument to be made for getting rid of Chris Hammonds after a swap.
I mean, are you saying that it's still likely to happen, or
No. I'm saying as a theoretical. I think that the swap is so random. You have no idea who you're going to wind up with, and so much is dictated by your circumstance of what is life after the swap. What is your new reality? And Chris's reality, his present reality, really any way that it was going to go, I think Chris was going to survive given this group of five people. I think that Chris was in good shape unless he really overplayed and blew it. But him and Zeke really connected. He was able to lure David back into his side. And he finally was able to get who he wanted to get out in Cece. And I think that that was kind of destiny. I think that whatever Chris wanted to have happen on that tribe was going to happen. And I don't feel particularly worried for him in this phase of the game anymore.
Is the story of this season potentially, Josh, a bridge between Gen X and the millennials started by Zeke and Chris?
Well, I do wonder, you know, what's the next move of this? You know, Zeke and Chris have bonded here. What would happen if this tribe went back to tribal council? Who gets clipped in that version? Does Michelle get, you know, taken out here as sort of some sort of compromise to David? It certainly wouldn't be David. If, you know, he has his idol, maybe he would play that. So I wonder what the long game of that tribe is. And I also think with Cece gone, no disrespect to Cece intended. She wasn't a great challenge performer. They still do have David, but I feel like this tribe could do well in challenges. So I think that they're probably decently okay for the next little while. But I think Chris and Zeke, in terms of their alliance, and it's really going to depend on where things shake out with whoever else is left in the game. The Gen Xers are an endangered species right now, much like nightbirds, who are very rare as well. I think that it's going to be tricky to see who still stands whenever all these people get back together, whenever a merge situation comes up. But I think that you could see some sort of, you know, hybrid Gen X millennial alliance that stems stems from this pairing of Chris and Zeke. But I think that there's also some other potential for some Gen X and millennial pairings that we could talk about on some of these other tribes. So I think that it could come from a few different sides, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if there's some sort of hybrid alliance, and that's going to be either the dominant force that marches forward or a dominant force for some time.
Will the story of this season ultimately be, Josh, the millennials and the Gen Xers who did not want to work with the other side, they will ultimately be the ones to perish in this game?
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be poetic? I think that the theme being millennials versus Gen X, you know, in my optimistic heart, Rob, I would love to see that story be millennials and Gen X. Oh. You know, what's with all this versus? Why can't we come together? Why can't we bridge the gap when there's such a great divide between these two generations that can't seem to agree on anything? Why not see them come together and work together finally? That would be inspiring, wouldn't it?
The millennial bridge.
The millennial bridge. I love that. That's a bridge to somewhere.
It's a bridge to somewhere. Well, yeah. Let's see where else we can find millennials and Gen Xers working together as we'll bounce around some of these other tribes. And
Do you have a favorite tribe of the three? Like when you saw the swap and you saw how it was drawn up, was there like, oh, this tribe's going to be boring. This tribe's going to be awesome. This tribe will be just fine. What were your feelings on the three tribes just as they got assigned?
No, I think that there's something interesting going on pretty much all of the tribes that I don't think this is a boring tribe yet.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think that that's right. I think probably the most boring tribe is Ikabula, which probably, like Kimmy Kappenberg, I'm cheating on to remember how to say that tribe.
But it's top heavy because you have both Jay, who's very fun, and yeah, Michaela, who's there. And then you have a couple of people that, Purple Sunday a little bit, and, you know, Will hasn't made any major contributions yet so far in the early going. So it's a little quiet over there.
You know, but even thinking about it, it's really just a matter of like, when does somebody speak up? Like, when does that tribe start getting a real fleshed out story? And that could still be pretty fun. And I think it speaks to the idea that the people that are left, I really like this cast. I mean, we talked about that a bunch before too, and we were talking about it last week. But of the 15 people that we have still in the game, I'm pretty happy with, you know, virtually everybody, if not everybody. I think everybody's bringing something to the table, at least in terms of uniqueness of character and character potential. So I think that Ikabula can have that. I think that it's a little early for it. It's really kind of the Michaela show, which is a great show on its own.
Michaela show is a pretty strong show.
Yeah, pretty strong show. Did you like her making the fire? That was good.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, I think that people might be overrating the making the fire business because if I recall correctly, there was a mental giant last season who had a very similar storyline. And I don't think that that necessarily was predictive of a winner edit in that spot.
Are you saying that Michaela is about to get severely bullied and voted out by a bounty hunter?
No, but I just think that we are so quick in the Survivor commentary sector to say, oh, did you see that? Oh, look at that, making that fire. Winner edit. That's a winner edit.
Yeah,
right,
sure.
There.
No,
it's amazing.
Yes,
100% agree. And, you know, the same exact thing happened with Alicia in the like second or third episode last season. So it's not necessarily.
Yeah, I think these are points in character development. You know, I don't think that, you know, fire represents your life, so she's going to win the game because she made the fire and she cried about it. Like, I don't think that that means, Michaela, you are the winner. It's not going to be a slam dunk, anything like that necessarily, but I think it's adding further depth to Michaela, which is instructive in terms of thinking, okay, Michaela is a fairly big deal this season, at least right now for this stage of the story and this stage of the game. Whether or not it's predicting anything about how she's going to do long term, there does seem to be an investment in Michaela as a character, and I think it's, you know, between a moment like this and also the insane challenge performance that she has been exhibiting over the past couple of episodes and again this week.
Yeah, which she really, NBA.
Yeah, you know, that was really amazing. That was really, really good. So I think that there's definitely been an emphasis in Michaela as a character. Not sure that there's a case that's being built for her to like clean sweep win this game or clean sweep be your fan favorite of the season or anything like that. But I think it's further dimension to that player that I really did enjoy seeing. And her confessional game is just so strong.
So strong. Really, even better than her NBA game.
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's close. I think it's close. Her challenge prowess and her confessional prowess are both pretty on.
What do you think the story is going to be at Ikabula?
I don't know. I don't know how much story there can be. I do think that Brett and Sunday are kind of screwed. They're you know, two Gen Xers against four millennials here, and I don't really see any. I don't think that there's been much that's been given groundwork in terms of any one of these four millennials turning on any one of the four. I think that they've all, there's really no reason. We haven't seen anything from Brett or Sunday to really speak to their game skill to dismantle this four. That's not to say that it's not impossible. We just really haven't seen it yet. So I would think that if there's a story to this tribe, it would be probably a pretty straightforward pagonging of Brett or Sunday, with maybe some agitation between a player or two, a millennial or two, that would just be on there because you need a little bit of drama. But I think probably the more realistic story for me is, I would be surprised if this tribe goes to a tribal council. Yeah. I think that this, you know, this is the strong tribe. This is the power tribe. These are the, you know, this is the Tandang of the group. You know, this is the squad that really should be able to crush it on most of these challenges. So I would be more surprised if they had like a losing story of any sort, based on where things stand right now. And if there was a losing story of any sort, I think it would just be a pretty straightforward pagonging of Brett or Sunday.
But why do you say that? Because Michaela is such a standout in the challenges?
I think that's part of it. Jay's really good as well. I think that the two of them are very strong, and they don't really seem to have like a weak link. I think that everybody else is like good at best. And in the case of Jay, is really good, I think. And Michaela has proven herself to be total badass. So I think that just if you look at all of the three tribes, that's probably the squad that I'd put my money on to be the most winning tribe of the three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, what's the other? I mean, I guess like the old Gen X, the new purple tribe, like they seem pretty decent, but Orange still has Dave to worry about. So I feel like there's more obvious weakness there and more obvious strength with Ikabula.
Yeah, I think that just by that, we didn't really see how alliances were shaping up there. It doesn't seem like that group is headed to a tribal council based on what we saw in the episode. So I tend to agree with that sentiment. But I just don't know how much of a powerhouse they are over the other tribes. Like, I feel like it's pretty evenly matched.
I think it's mostly evenly matched. They would be my, you know, they'd inch ahead as my front runners. And I think that it is combined with the fact that I'm just not seeing like a major story there other than Michaela is awesome. Jay continues to be hilarious. I guess there's a little bit of tension between Jay and Brett. So maybe that could be, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a setup for something, that Brett is coming in being like, all right, I know that I got to work hard. Like, I really got to really show my cards here and do really, really good in terms of building the shelter. And then Jay is like, that guy doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he's not impressed with Brett's shelter building skills whatsoever. This cop is not a construction worker. So maybe there's a little bit of tension there that could bear out moving forward. But otherwise, it's really just the Michaela show right now.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting to me to see how that group of millennials ultimately functions together if they do have a vote, because I feel like that is a pretty eclectic group where you have Will, Jay, Michaela, and Hannah. And to see the four of them try to come together on a decision on anything, it seems like that would be interesting to watch.
It'd be interesting to watch, but they've voted together before. You know, they voted together on the Mari vote, and Hannah was a little bit of a wild card there, but she was brought in mostly by Michelle, but Jay is hanging out there in that moment as well. Jay is the guy who convinces Michaela to get on board with that vote, so they have some sort of working history together. And Will and Michaela, who knows? You know, who knows, you know, in terms of their dynamic, do they have something that's close? Will really seems to be kind of probably the least predictable of those four, I think, for me, just in terms of, we don't really know where his head is at as well as we know the other three based on what we've seen on the show. But I feel like there's working history with these four. It is eclectic, but I think that they have an established working history, at least an established voting history together.
Sure, there's a working history, but who is the whip there to go ahead and put this vote together? Like
Will Hip?
Yeah. You saw where on the previous time they voted together, where it was Michelle was really the force that was moving around and telling people who to go where.
I think Jay was an underrated aspect of that. And I think that Jay, you know, maybe we didn't give him a ton of credit for it at the time, but Jay was very much driving that conversation between Figgy and Michaela. Michelle and Jay really split up. Michelle brings in Will pivotally, and Jay brings in Michaela pivotally. And then Hannah is brought in the 11th hour by Michelle, you know, just really throwing her a bone, not a Ken bone. Throwing her a regular bone. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, Jay has proven that he has been able to, you know, kind of be at the hub of things. So I wouldn't be surprised like to see more of that from him. Yeah. Much like a Cassandra, indeed.
But anecdotally, I feel like that Mari was saying that Jay was sort of scrambling before that vote, where that there was was some talk that Figgy was throwing him under the bus and he was sort of like really panicky. And that was why Zeke and Adam were telling him, like, look, you're okay. It's going to be, oh, we're going to vote off Figgy and then Michaela will be next. And that's when he went and started talking to Michaela.
Yeah. I mean, not again, not to be number one J fanboy over here and show my extreme J bias, not my J buyers.
No, please.
But I feel like that doesn't sound like such a bad thing to me. Shows me somebody who is concerned for themselves. Shows me somebody who is willing to scramble, unlike Brenda Lowe, when their name comes up and is willing to really hit the ground and do some dirty work and was effective at it. You know, came out the other side on the complete majority end of the vote. I don't know. We're talking about, I think, a couple of different things right now. But I think that Jay has better game savviness potentially than maybe he's been given credit for. Again, I just love Jay, and so I'm rooting for Jay. That's really what it comes down to.
And then, Josh, the other group is this purple tribe where we have this situation where Adam is squarely in the middle between, on one side, the Figgy Taylor showmance, and then on the other side, the Gen Xers. I think that we've established where my philosophy is on what should happen. Do you think that that is going to be the story when all is said and done here?
I can't even tell you how much I laughed when on the know-it-alls, you just stared into the camera and told Adam, the super duper fan, you know what to do.
Yeah.
You know the play, you know the move, you know what to do here. I thought that was fantastic because yes, all of that 100%. Yes, it's time to make the move. Adam, you are a super duper fan. You're in this swing vote position. You can be the president as long as you don't talk so much about how you are the president, but you've got Ken and Jess on one side. You've got Figgy and Taylor on one side. Taylor is really not making any sort of secret over what's going on between him and Figgy, you know, mouthing you're hot over and over again in the middle of camp. This is about to blow up. We also know from, you know, the exit press with Paul and Paul talking about how, even though it didn't seem this way on the show, at the summit, it was so clear that Taylor and Figgy were a thing. It was like the first thing that they found out about the Millennial Tribe. So everybody in the game has to know about this. This is the time. This is the move. Adam was already on the downside of the numbers when he was back at Millennials. If the game really is taking a turn toward, it depends on your relationship with Millennials, how well you're going to do out here, as Chris supposed earlier in this episode, that that's really going to be a big factor, then it's time to draw some battle lines and it's time to spill some blood. And I don't think that you need to be afraid of any sort of ramifications if you were to split up Taylor and Figgy. If you have the opportunity to do it, you do it now, you make it happen, you pair it with Ken and you make America happy. I think that that's the move.
Make America happy again.
Yes,
Adam.
That's right. That's right. Maha. Yeah. So I think that that's going to be great because you got to imagine that super duper fan Adam Klein knows the play, as you suggested. And if he doesn't, oh man, the internet's darling is gonna take a little bit of a roasting.
Take a little bit of a turn. And I do think that there's something interesting there. If Adam decides to go in that direction and then decides to ultimately go with Ken and Jessica, I wonder if that we could see, come the merge time, some sort of power alliance forming around a reunification of Adam and Zeke, plus the alliance of David and Ken and Jessica, plus also now Chris is on board as the sixth wheel. And I don't know, maybe, and could Brett come in by proxy, or are those guys then squeezed out? Because I feel like Zeke's not going to like that.
I don't know. I think that Brett would be able to come into that. I think that that's Chris's closest person. And then David sort of has like the power there as a three with two twos, or maybe the two twos would go against the three. I don't know. Getting a little heady there, but I could see that. I could totally see that.
Sunday
is there as well. So if you're starting to try to call the shot of like, what does a Millennial Gen X hybrid alliance look like, maybe it looks something like that. I do think that like Michelle does not seem to me like she would be on board with that. I think Michelle's looking to hang out with those Millennials. I think she wants to get back to that. But I can see, of all those other people that you mentioned that are in the mix on these two tribes, I could see some sort of cross alliance hitting once we get to the merge. That's obviously forecasting quite a bit, but I could see it. I could see it. I think it's possible. I just think that Adam sticking with Taylor and Figgy here makes close to no sense to me. Not just in terms of like, do the right thing for everybody. Break this couple up. That's going to be fun to watch. Not to be all mean and, you know, anti-love and everything like that. But I think that also it's just the right move gameplay wise. It's time to turn this thing on. It's time to spill some millennial blood.
Okay. We got a season is basically what we're saying.
I think so. I think you're right. I think this is the best episode of the season so far. And I think, to me, more than anything, I think that it signals that we've got a potentially really great stretch ahead, because I think there's a lot of great players still in the mix, and tons of great characters, regardless of gameplay, with potentially some really serious shifting loyalties. I think the 2-3 tribe swap format maybe makes things a little complicated to follow in terms of tracking story, but I think in terms of shaking up the game and shaking and rattling some loyalties, I think that it's a great gameplay decision, and I think that that could really pay off some dividends when we get to the merge.
Yeah, and I think we've touched on this in Evolution of Strategy, but any season, episodes 2-4 are usually my least favorite part of the season. I feel like that once we get through that, and then especially once we get to the merge, this is where I really start getting very pumped up about a Survivor season.
Yeah, I think that's Survivor, man. I think that's the formula.
That's the formula. Okay, Josh, I have so many questions to run past you. This is a question from Johan, who says, did you guys appreciate Jay's excitement when he sang the Survivor theme song a moment before Jeff gave out the new buffs? Because I thought it was funny, and I appreciate that as a super fan, not a super duper fan, just a super fan.
Johan's just a super fan.
Did you catch that, Josh?
Yeah, it was a quick little moment. Yeah,
here it is. I have a clip of it.
Yeah, let's hear it.
This is over with. Oh, and
oh, oh, oh. Don't open him yet.
But appreciate the effort, but I don't know what that was.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't know if that's quite right. Survivor.
Yeah, maybe it was a parody of the Survivor theme song.
Maybe they couldn't get the licensing to air it in the episode. That's possible.
Like Happy Birthday, a very, very, very difficult song, very pricey song. Happy birthday, by the way, Rob. Happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you very much, Josh. Wiggle Room. Very much.
How long did you celebrate your birthday for? Days? You know, was it a long stretched out thing?
Yeah, I think there was an hour on Thursday before I got my wife mad at me again. Yeah.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Hashtag make Nicole mad again. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. We don't want to.
At least a good 45 minutes, I think.
Okay, great. No, I loved that moment from Jay. Again, I love Jay. Jay's great. Just adds a little bit of spice, you know, just a little bit of an extra kick to everything that he's involved in. Great, great character. Fantastic character. Love you, Jay.
Okay.
Love you, Jay.
Right. David Baltazar wants to know, is Ali Lasher right? Is there something a bit off with Ken? Are there people who in your life that demand respect and demand a certain way of being spoken to? What do you think, Josh, about the pendulum swinging back the other way? The pendulum
on
Ken and being so proper in demanding how he is being spoken to?
Yeah, so given that it's been a really busy weekend, I haven't been doing a ton of podcast listening, so I'm behind on my RHAP. That being said, when I went out for my coffee this morning, I did listen to about half of the voicemail podcast with Allie, who did a spectacular job, and I appreciated her position on Ken. You know, she's saying like she wants to come out as the first person who's turning against Ken, America's darling here, and I thought that she laid out a compelling case for the fact that like Ken needs these pleases and thank yous and needs things a certain way, and how that can be really, really off-putting. And as somebody who has been outspoken about loving Ken, and I still do love Ken, I think that he is a treat to marvel at, Rob. I think that he is a visual delight on this show. I do think that there's something to what she's saying, to what Allie is suggesting about how he can be a little difficult. He really needs things a certain way. And I think that, you know, you brought up the evolution of strategy earlier, but in you and I going through all of the seasons, I think one of the things that we saw as one of the most desirable traits in somebody who can really succeed and do well in Survivor is flexibility, and not just like physical flexibility, which would be great as well, but somebody who is able to roll with the punches a bit and to turn with the tide and really react to situations when they're not going the way that you want them to go. And Allie highlighting these aspects about Ken does make me wonder how much of that elasticity does he have? Does he have the ability to really get rejected in terms of a vote, in terms of a plan, to not have it go the way he wanted to go and really rebound from it and be totally cool and not steaming and not be so self-serious and huffy about it? That's yet to be seen. We'll cross that bridge if we get to it. But I think that it's a worthy concern. The millennial bridge. It's a worthy concern. It's a worthy argument for why you wouldn't necessarily love Ken.
Are you getting a little nervous?
Totally get it. Am I getting nervous?
Yes.
That something bad is happening with Ken, or that the public opinion is going to turn on Ken?
Both. or either.
No, I'm not. I mean, I think that that'd be good TV. Like, if Ken is in for some sort of smackdown, like some sort of karmic smackdown, I think that would be fun. I think that that could be really, really good television. I love Ken because I think he's a good character. I think he's compelling, but I have yet to be convinced that he's a great player. And I think that that question's going to bear out over, you know, the coming weeks of Survivor.
Matt Lefton has a question. Chris's comment about choking David was shown on the show and mentioned to Tribal Council. Is this foreshadowing of a bully storyline for Chris?
What's that going to look like? I mean, I'm just imagining the Eric Reichenbach illustration of that right now would just be like Homer throttling Bart Simpson. You know, like it's just like what it's going to end up looking like. Is that foreshadowing a turn from David against Chris? I don't know if it's necessarily doing that. I'm glad that we didn't see physical violence on the show this week in that way. I'm glad no one got choked out, aren't you?
I'm glad.
Yeah, well, that would have been bad. That would have been ugly. I don't think that David could survive the choking from Chris. I don't think anyone really could. I think that'd be bad. It would be bad.
You know, you were talking about him as the Hulk on last week's episode. But to me, he reminds me, I see him as like the Undertaker.
Okay, well, you're gonna have to catch me up a little bit. I know what the Undertaker is, but I'm not like super into my WWE history. But yeah. I mean, isn't he mostly undefeated? Isn't that the Undertaker's thing?
Well, at WrestleMania recently,
right.
Yeah.
Right,
certainly could see him delivering a choke slam more so than like wringing somebody's neck.
So does that mean like a fake choke? Is that like a wrestling move? It's to make it look bad. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here.
It probably would take way too long to explain. So
I think like to the idea of like, wrestling's fake and like the idea of like, there's a lot of performance involved and it's very physically demanding and everything like that. But it's, you know, a lot of sleight of hand and illusion and everything like that. I think that there's something to be said for Chris threatening physical violence in a jovial way against David. I think David had every reason in the world to vote the way that he did in this episode. There's a lot of reasons why I think it made sense for him to do what he had to do. But I think one of them, probably a fairly compelling case, is like being afraid of Chris. That's a guy worth being intimidated by. And even Chris just jokingly saying like, if you don't vote with me this time, I'm going to be so mad that I will choke you out at Tribal Council. We'll make Survivor history together, David. I think, you know, clearly he's not actually going to do that, but showing like that level of, you know, like painting a vivid image like that, and like having that be the mental manifestation of what his anger could look like at some point down the line, it might be an effective intimidation tactic, especially against a guy like David, who's so paranoid.
I agree. I think that they're not coming up with a plan that's going to blindside Chris and take him out of the game. Like no matter what happens, like they were coming up with a plan that was going to send him back to the beach with them and he was not going to be happy. And if David is afraid of a night bird, I don't know how scared he must be of Chris.
I mean, the night birds are scarier than Chris Hammonds. Just to be fair.
Impossible.
Chris Hammonds is like a close second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This is a question from Tyler Jacob Jones, who wants to know, Josh, is Michaela too good to be true? I want to embrace my growing love for her, but with so much positive content after just 5 episodes, I can't shake the feeling I'm going to have my heart broken before the season is over. I've been burned so many times before. Is there any chance that Michaela's story doesn't end in a devastating blindside? I just got over Aubrey and my heart is too scared to hope again. Josh,
Tyler
ever love again?
I don't know. I don't know if Tyler can ever love again, like ever, like fully, really, like completely give yourself to the trust of the situation. I don't know. After a heartbreak like that, it's difficult. I've been there for sure. Are we in for Heartbreak City with Michaela? What's your instinct on this, Rob? Do you think that that's how this story ends? Are we building Michaela up to be such a lovable character just to let us all down later on down the line?
Well, I don't know if you can ever get to a point where I can only love rooting for a Survivor character if I know they're going to win. I mean, if that's the case, then, you know,
that'd be very difficult.
It's a really hard way to start searching out spoilers and then figure out a way to love the person that you think is going to win. Because I don't know how you could do that. I mean, there's no guarantee in any area of life that necessarily that the person that you decide to love is going to work out. It's a happy story.
Right. I mean, look, the final season of Lost is trash. It's not good. It's bad. There's a few good moments in there, but overall, it's a real disappointment given all of the time you have invested in Lost all the way through. Lost is still my favorite show because it is such a great journey, and there's such great character work, and there's so many funny moments, and there are episodes that are just majestic to put your eyeballs on, and the music is so good, and there's still so many reasons to love that show, even though when it goes off the diving board, it just biffs its face on the landing. If Michaela doesn't win, if Michaela gets voted out in a heartbreaking way, that doesn't negate the fact that she gave great confessionals, kicked some butt in some challenges, or whatever else happens with Michaela. She's still going to be an awesome Michaela who just, you know, it didn't end so well for her, unless it's like a really unflattering ending, in which case maybe that would not be so good. But I think that to view anything, Survivor characters, Survivor players, seasons of television, anything in life as completely results dependent, I think it's the wrong way to look at a thing. I think that's how you're never going to love again. If you don't allow yourself to love the journey, how could you love it all?
Yeah, open your heart, see what happens. Go for it. Even though Michaela does not really like any sort of public displays of affection.
Miss Cuddle Shack.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's out on Miss Cuddle Shack.
Yeah.
Thumbs down on Miss Cuddle Shack.
Antonio had a similar sentiment about Michaela, too.
What did Antonio say?
Well, he's another Michaela fanboy. Petition to rename this episode the Michaela Room.
The Michaela Room. I don't even like that name.
Yeah. Is there even a good Survivor comp for Michaela right now? She's funny, cutting, challenge beast, sharp edge, but emotional. Great at the three C's. Camp, challenges, and confessional. Does anyone compare?
Are those the three C's? I thought the three C's were something else. I know what the two C's are. She got voted out in this episode.
Zing.
Zing. Yeah, I mean, look, it's early. I love Antonio, of course. And I love Michaela, too, so far. But it's early. I mean, to say, like, there's no one to compare. You know, we're only five episodes in. So let's give it some time. Yeah. I don't want to hype up the Michaela train too much, especially while I'm working overtime to hype up the J train really, really hard. So, you know, I got to focus on one train at a time.
As long as it's not the train car to Terminus.
No. Oh, my God. Blah, blah. But
the one thing that I would say that just to, you know, walk back a little bit of, and look, I love Michaela almost as much as Tyler and Antonio. Yeah. I would say that let's see what her strategic chops are. You know, we've seen her in one vote, and yes, she voted against her emotional interests in that, where she hates Figgy. She voted to keep Figgy in one vote. But let's see her at a few more tribal councils.
Totally agreed. Totally agreed. And I mean, I do think from like the one millennial tribal council that we did see, I think that we learned some, you know, there were some revelations about the way some of these people play the game. Tiny revelations, and there's still not a ton that we can project into the future just because we haven't seen them play super hard yet. But that being said, from that one tribal council alone, I don't know that I was necessarily super impressed with Michaela from that perspective. So I think that we got to wait and see. We have to see how that plays out.
Josh, speaking of tiny revelations, were you able to uncover any revelations at all in your exclusive work this week?
My exclusive work this week. No, you know, there's no exclusive this week for real this time. I know that I've said that a lot and then there's like some surprise ending or anything. But yeah, no exclusive, no actual exclusive this week. There's a non-exclusive song that we could play that announces that there's no exclusive.
Okay, let me see. Let me fire this up.
And I'm here.
Yeah, so no exclusive this week, but we do at least have a new jingle for any time there is no actual exclusive. You can just let Alanis Morissette, Alanis Morissette.
I don't want to imagine Wanda in that movie theater with Dave Coulier. I'm not going to do that, Josh. I'm not going to paint that mental image.
Oh, God.
Jagged Woo! Little Palau. Yeah.
Oh, Jagged Little Palau is a great album. I loved that. I loved
one of Wanda's best albums.
Yeah, yeah. So Alanis Morissette, Wanda bringing in the non-exclusive announcement. So nothing this week. I was working on something that was going to be like the greatest reach that I had ever attempted in the past. It was going to be the theme song from The Nanny, which was only being used because there is a lyric in the theme song from The Nanny that goes, "Watch out, CC." That was literally the only reason. That was the only reason that was going to happen. I couldn't make it work. Sorry.
Surprisingly.
If you find me at the live know-it-alls this week, I will sing more from that for you if you buy me a beer.
Okay. Buy me a beer. At Loser's Lodge.
No, we're all winners in that lodge.
Okay. Well, looking forward to seeing you.
I'm hyped up for that. Yeah. Yeah. Looking forward to see. I hope that I'll be able to see you, Rob. I'm going to the eye doctor earlier in the day of the live know-it-all, so I should have dilated eyes and everything. I'm already very hard of seeing, and it's going to be an even greater challenge at the live know-it-all. So I'm looking forward to how that adds an extra component to the social politics of a live know-it-alls.
Okay, well, I'm very excited to see you in person this week, and it should be a lot of fun. And I'm also very excited for next week in the Wiggle Room when we have a chance to talk about what I'm doing next Saturday when I'm going to actually be at the EW Pop Fest, Josh.
Oh my gosh. Wow. This must be pop. That's great. That's going to be fun.
Yes.
Are you competing in the challenges and stuff?
Yes. I talked about it last week. And of course, if you don't know what this is a thing that Entertainment Weekly is putting together. It's like a big convention. It's like a 2-day thing of like a bunch of different entertainment properties are going to be participating in this, and they're going to have like panels. It's almost like some sort of like a Comic-Con type extravaganza that they're doing. And they're doing a big Survivor thing over the weekend where people are going to having a chance to compete in Survivor challenges. And they have recruited a number of challenge beasts to compete in these challenges that Jeff Probst is going to actually call.
Interesting. Such as, who's going to be there?
Well, you can't have challenge beasts without Ozzy.
Right.
Woo. Yes. Ty.
Okay.
Mari Takahashi.
Oh, I love Mari Takahashi.
Yes.
Good. She's still in the mix. That's a great sign. That's a great sign that Mari Takahashi is being included in this. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes. Nat 10.
Okay.
Abby Maria.
Okay. I want to warn you, if you F with her during this competition,
well,
or challenge, I should say.
I don't know who thought this was a good idea to have Abby Maria and Woo there.
What if she... that's bad, too. What about her knee? Is her knee okay? Is she going to be all right?
I'm not sure.
Okay, keep an eye on that.
Yes, and then also the Rob that sucks.
Yeah, that's you. That's great.
So finally, we will have that head-to-head matchup we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
Of me versus Ozzy in a challenge.
Oh, that's going to be good. That's going to be great. That's going to be what they couldn't show up for Joey Amazing. Joey Amazing couldn't show up here.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was in terms
of
like
a show. He's making a show called Maha, right? Isn't that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know exactly who they went out to, who they were happy to hear from, but that is what the roster is that they have announced. So I can't wait until what do you think will be funnier? If I am on the team opposite Ozzy, or if I'm on the challenge team with Ozzy, and then Ozzy is like berating me like Cochran in South Pacific when I'm screwing up the challenge.
I think it's that, because I don't think that you're going to go head to head against Ozzy if you're on opposite sides, but you might be involved in some sort of team challenge where your success is going to dictate Ozzy's success. And if you are not successful, well, that could be great. That could be good.
Damn it. What is going on with these ropes? Like, Ozzy, I'm doing the best I can over here.
That could be great. That could
be fun. It'll be fun to talk about next week on the Wiggle Room.
Do you think you have a chance?
A chance to what?
he really doesn't have a chance.
I mean, maybe they'll just like put me on the puzzle at the end or something like that.
Yeah. No, I'm very, very eager to. Well, that will be a great part of the Wiggle Room next week. We will have the rundown on your experience returning to the John Kierhofer world.
Sure. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to just getting heckled mercilessly by Jeff. Rob, looking much fatter than 10 years ago.
It's great. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. We'll see. All right. So anyway, looking forward to that. Well, what's the hashtag, Josh? We got Nightbirds. We got Nightbirds. The Kendulum. We got Maha.
I'd be careful with the Nightbirds. I mean, if you want to dare for that to be the hashtag, but you might summon them to your home. So, you know, give us a hashtag Nightbirds at your own peril.
All right. Good stuff. Of course, you can follow Josh on Twitter at Round Howard. We'll be talking Walking Dead later on tonight. We will be following everything that Josh is going to be writing about The Walking Dead for Hollywood Reporter as well.
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff. Westworld coming up.
Yeah, Westworld. Have you still not watched the Westworld?
That might be a good thing for the plane.
That's a great thing for the plane. It'll be four episodes at that point. And you will not regret it. You'll be very happy with the choice.
All right, good stuff. Next up, we've got David Bloomberg coming in for Why CC Lost. Plenty of fun stuff coming up this week. And again, no live Survivor Know-It-Alls this Wednesday night because we're going to be at Caroline's on Broadway doing the show there. And looking forward to seeing a bunch of you guys there and at the party thereafter. So good stuff. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.